Yes. Welcome back. Welcome back, Mindbully Podcast. Norris Odiyase, I am lit, turned up for you to sit your happy behind down to sit and talk to the kid. I'm so thankful, honestly, for this community we're building together. For you guys to tune in every single week to hear these stories and be inspired. God be the glory. If you haven't listened to last week's episode with Trayvon Palmer, I need you to stop. Don't even think about listening to this episode again and go listen to his story. It was so powerful and so impactful. And I know it helped me, so I know it will help you. Quick shout out, Holly Wahoo says, you can relate to Norris no matter your age, race, gender. He's got something for everyone. Very enjoyable, very humorous, very in tune for someone of his age. So much more than just an all-star basketball player. You need to give him a listen. 5 stars and says, Norris is locked in. Holly, such kind words. I'm so thankful for that. That's love. That's live. It gets me turned and charged that you think I'm locked in. I'm glad you're locked in. And I'm glad for the people that have left reviews, comments, the love that you've shown to this podcast. I'm so thankful that we're all locked in together. So I hope we stay locked in and tune into this episode. This week's episode, this week's guest is honestly a little different. I'm so appreciative, so thankful, so grateful to have Miss Sherilyn Weber on the podcast. Sherilyn's an entrepreneur, the face of more than just PR. She's a writer, a singer, a model. But that's not the story she came to share today. You know, the funny thing is about this episode and what makes it different is how it came together. I was scrolling on Instagram and stopped at this story that honestly moved me in such a way that I craved to hear more about. In that story, Sherilyn walks us through her past month of her isolation and self-healing journey. It was so powerful. I literally screenshotted it. And days later, she asked to be on the podcast. That's not coincidental, not by mistake. I know that moment was purposeful. At the end, she says, the best thing I could have ever done for myself since that moment, abundance and love flow to me and will continue to flow to me. I'm glowing different. I'm so thankful to have her share her story and to speak about overcoming childhood trauma and healing her inner child. I hope you too glow different after hearing her story. Really?
Yeah.
Sheesh. Trouble in paradise?
No trouble. Not at all. Not at all.
Literally, I'm honestly appreciative and so thankful to have you on this podcast because, one, for some context, for anybody listening, Miss Sherilyn Weber's on the show today. Sherilyn, how does it feel? Mindbully Podcast.
I'm excited. I've been waiting to be on this podcast for real.
That's love. I think if somebody asked to be on your podcast, that means they recognize this place as a safe place and something that gives value to other people. So once again, thank you, Sherilyn, and hello.
Hello.
Sherilyn Weber, Euless, Texas. I think, and I always say this, in life and what just shapes us as people as we grow up is the formative years, our childhood years. I think they're really instrumental. If you could walk me through your formative years, let's start with the parts that you love. Can you take me to a time that shaped the Sherilyn that you love today?
In my childhood specifically?
Correct, yeah.
That I love.
What moment in your childhood could you say, hey, this is what I love about me that I still do now? That is the reason why I do that.
I have always been a creative. I've always drew things. I was very artsy. I was always expressing emotions through artwork, whether that be, you know, poems, drawing, painting, you know, just any kind of creative outlet for sure. I have always been in tune with that part of me in my adolescence, for sure.
Yeah, and I think that plays out in your work and everything you do today. And not even to put that on the back burner, I want to dive into that, but your post on your IG was kind of formed and created through the other part, the other side of that, not the parts that you love, but I guess the parts that you're still currently working through. If you could walk me through a time in your adolescence, what are the things or the situations and experiences that form that part that Sherilyn is still working through today?
Yeah, and that's going to be the main difference between those two questions, is that the parts of my childhood I love was very vague and very short. You know what I'm
saying?
But I can go on and on and on about how horrible my childhood was. And everybody goes through things, for sure, but people don't even recognize the small traumas that aren't really talked about. Trauma doesn't have to be like this big catastrophic thing, for sure. You know what I'm saying? Like, although that did happen, there were also the little things that happened that I also had to work through and I'm still working through. And even like, as I am going through this healing journey, I have flashbacks of those small traumas that I totally completely forgot about. And I'm just like, oh, okay, well, now that makes sense. That makes sense as to why I react a certain way or feel a certain way when people tell me, you know what I'm saying? Like, just certain actions.
If you would peel back some of those layers, if you don't mind, what are some of those things, those little things that you like, wow, that I feel that way because of that's what happened. What were some of those traumas, I guess, that you're referring to?
Well, I grew up in foster care, in the system for sure, for about 2.5 years. And then I moved back in with my mom. She got well, and then she got sick again. And then so once she got sick again, I was pretty much back. I wouldn't say I wasn't, you know, it wasn't through paperwork this time. I was just kind of couch hopping throughout high school. And even then, like, you think like you can handle it. Like, even as a teenager in high school, like, I was, you know, couch hopping. I was like, well, I've been through this before. It's no big deal. But as an adult, I look back and I'm just like, you know, that is as traumatizing as it was when I was 6, 7 years old. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
For those who don't know, I grew up in a single parent household. My mother was a paranoid schizophrenic. So I really do know she loved us unconditionally, but she just didn't know how to properly take care of us. And with that, a lot of consequences came from that on her side and ours on the long term, because your childhood paves the way of how, I don't want to say successful you are, but just who you are as a person in your adulthood, for sure.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing that. I think it's courageous to even speak from a place that you are now. It's kind of separate, but you still recognize this is why I am the way I am and some of the things I'm working through. So I know a lot of our listeners, anybody listening in that same situation, they're like, hey, she's a beautiful girl. She's doing so many things in her life and she still has her eyes on the prize and building her next tomorrow and building what she thinks is a beautiful future. I think, honestly, that's so impactful to hear on the onset. But if you were to walk back to your childhood, if you were to take us behind the eyes of Sherilyn, what were some of the things that you saw in those moments, like visually? How did you feel in those moments? Like, what was the aroma of the room, if you will, if you were to sit back years ago?
In that moment, you don't really know what to feel. You don't really know what's going on in your child. You feel fear, you feel embarrassment, you feel guilt, you feel all types of emotions, but at the end of the day, you really don't know what's happening. And there's a lot of things that are out of your control because you are a child. You're just going with the flow because an adult or somebody of, I guess, parental figure comes to you and tells you like, hey, like, this is what's going on. So we're just going to do this and that and everything will be okay.
Yeah.
You know, and you just have to go with that because, like I said, it's just literally above you at that point as a child. And that's what a lot of people don't realize is like, as a parent, the smallest things can traumatize a child, and there's really not much you can do about it. They can do about it just because they are a child and they're learning And that's the kind of behaviors that they're learning to accept.
Yeah. And Sherilyn, even when you talk about these things, one, you're honestly, you don't dive into the details of it. And that's totally fine. It's to your prerogative and whatever you want to do. But I kind of look at it on a different lens at a different stage. Like you just said, what people don't realize, a child can find trauma through everything. It's almost like you're looking at it as a parent. So I see this girl that's looking like, I just came from this family, from this situation in my childhood. I want to change my perspective and what I see as a beautiful future and family for myself. It's almost like I'm hearing somebody that's like, I want this beautiful big family. I'm going to do it different. If you were, obviously, you want to be a mother and have a beautiful family in your life. Can you tell me, how would you love young Sherilyn?
Through my isolation and my self-healing, I've honestly had to tap into that. I've had to tap into learning how to heal the inner child. That is such an important part of healing. You have to comfort that inner child. Like I said, a lot of the actions and reactions that I've had were her, not me. You know what I'm saying? Not the adult Sherilyn. That was like the little child Sherilyn that was coming out.
What were some of those reactions?
As far as like personal conversations that I would have with relatives. You know what I'm saying? Like sometimes there would be outbursts. Sometimes I would say things I wouldn't mean. Sometimes I would just be unnecessarily mean because I just felt that way. You know what I'm saying? But that's not who I am.
Right.
I've never been a mean person, but at the end of the day, like that's just the inner child expressing herself in a way that she has never been able to before. Because unfortunately, when you're going through that situation, you kind of learn to suppress your emotions and they bottle up inside. And sometimes things trigger that. And when things trigger that, it comes out. And that's another thing, like going through my healing journey. And that's something I'm still learning now. Yes, I was, you know, off social media for a month. And that was just because I was really, really sad. I'm not sad anymore, but I'm still fighting those past traumas and those flashbacks that I have from childhood and even like my teenage years, the trauma that I went through back then. So, I mean,
I think honestly, when you speak and it's almost like it's coming off nonchalant, like I'm still fighting like all these traumas, but I think like you're doing the courageous work. Like you're,
right,
this is,
yes.
This is empowerment. Like there's so many people fighting similar battles. Obviously your battles are unique to you, but they don't fight. Honestly, they're not fighting them because they're not facing them. You recognizing them is the first thing. Like you realize like, hey, I need to separate myself from certain things. I need to focus on myself, love myself. I think the intention to do so is the first step. And I know that you doing that will lead to a better future for not only yourself, but everyone that's around you. I think that's just something that's so impactful, honestly. But when you say that you're dealing with these traumas and you're dealing with healing the inner child, if you would walk us through the means of how you do so. So like you're talking about a trauma that you faced, right? Whether it's a specific time, whether if it's a specific moment, how do you not play that reaction again? Could you take me to specifically the steps of how you work to heal your inner child?
Well, first and foremost, it's something that I've been knowing that I've needed to do for a long time. I started meditating probably my freshman year of college at Texas Tech. So it's something that I have been practicing, but I don't think at the time I had the right, I don't want to say the right mindset, but I didn't have the right direction. I didn't know exactly how to heal it. I was doing different things and trying to figure it out, but it was just like, still kind of felt the same.
Yeah.
But it took grieving. Mm. And I really hate to say that, but it took grieving for me to truly find find that profound action that I need to take. And
grieving over what?
I lost somebody. It wasn't a death, but I did lose somebody that was very near and dear to my heart that I didn't expect to lose. I felt very betrayed. And
when was this?
It was beginning of May. It was the beginning of May. And it was not an emotion or a feeling that I haven't felt before, but it was one of those times where it was just kind of like, oh my God, I don't ever want to feel this again. I don't ever want to feel this again. I don't ever want somebody to be okay with doing what they did. And like, and I tell people, like, somebody doesn't have to die for you to grieve. If you truly cared and valued and loved somebody and they leave, or you leave them, you know, that's going to take a lot. You know, it takes a lot to recover from overall.
If, if you don't mind me asking, what exactly did they do?
I mean, just, you know, just lying. I mean, this is just lying.
Yeah. And
you know, just betrayal.
Right. How did it make you feel? Because a lot of the times when somebody does something to us, we either internalize and we think of the inner child and we think to our childhood, and it automatically triggers. It's like an emotional addiction to our past. So what were some of the things that your voice in your head was triggering when that person did that thing to you in those moments?
Well, it wasn't even necessarily that alone. So right around the time that it happened, my schizophrenic mother, was living with me. Nobody knows this, but like through March and April, my mom lived with me for like 6 weeks, and it was really hard. Like, people really don't know how hard it is to deal with a schizophrenic parent. It's basically taking care of like a big ass child. Like, I really hate to say that. It may sound ignorant, but I know my mom. I've done plenty of research on the mental illness.
Yeah.
And if anybody knows, people who are mentally ill, like, a lot of them don't believe they have a sickness, or they refuse to believe it. So it's just been really hard to get her help. So there have been cycles where, you know, she ends up homeless and we have to take care of her, and then she gets back on her feet and then she's homeless again. You know what I'm saying? So it was definitely a dark side of the cycle, of course. And she had to, you know, sleep on my couch for a little bit, and it got really hard, and I got really depressed. And within that moment, you know, I had a really close friend to me, comfort me and be there for me and do all the things that a friend and a lover should have done. But with that, there were unconscious behaviors that this person was doing that led to them hurting me in the end. So
how did you feel?
With that and the situation with my mom, it really made me feel really shitty. I was just like, damn, like, what the fuck do I gotta do?
Right.
To just get some genuine love around here. You know what I'm saying? Like, what do I gotta do to just feel like a normal fucking human being? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm tired of having problems. I'm tired of niggas. Ooh, excuse me.
No, you're good.
You know
you're
what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Like, just screw me over. And I just, like I said, I got fed up. And like I said, I had really felt deeply for this person because they did come at a very vulnerable time of my life.
Right.
So, and was supporting me and doing, you know, what I felt like a man should be doing for me at that moment in time.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I felt fast for him. And like I said, things didn't turn out to be what they seemed, and I got my heart broken. So with that, I grieved, and with my mom living here, like, I felt guilt.
Yeah.
There was a lot of heavy emotions that I was feeling that led me into that isolation.
Sherilyn, what you just displayed is honestly the most, for lack of a better word, mature, independent, strong. Like, you have this mother with you, like, you're helping and securing for your mother and your household. But again, you're on the other side, you're experiencing life. Like, you come from a different childhood than most. So when you find like this sliver of hope or something that shows a love in your real life, you're like, I'm going to dive 100% into that. And so, like, you're juggling the two of feeling the emotions and being there for your mom. Like, you got to be there. You're feeling the guilt of that, but you're trying to love as much as you do. And when the love just goes, you feel shattered and almost, and you go into a place of isolation where it feels like, well, I just gave my heart to somebody. I'm dealing with somebody at home. I'm helping, but like, when is it good enough for me to be loved? It's almost frustrating to go over this cycle over and over and over again. So what you just displayed is honestly heavy, so heavy in all the emotions. And in those real moments, they can break a lot of people. I like how, and I appreciate your candor and how vulnerable you are to share those moments, because a lot of people, again, experience similar type of things. They'll never share. They keep on internalizing, and they suppress. Right. I like what you said about your childhood, about how you internalized. And then when you walk, and this is totally different, I ramble all the time, but as you walk and you grow up and you go to Trinity High School, I read and I saw some of your other stuff that you said, you started to act out like you were a bad kid. I think that in adolescence, after childhood to adolescence, 8 to 18 is where you really act out, because you can express like, I could do my thing. If you could take me to those times, what were the different ways that young Sherilyn used to act out?
Oh my God. And that's the thing. This is a great interview, because a lot of people don't talk about this part of trauma. People like to forget about the old person that they used to be, or that they had to learn to grow out of. But yeah, I was bad. I was bad as fuck. Like, I was like in detention like every other day. Like, this is, so you know, my mom was schizophrenic. So she, you know, thought everybody was after her and shit. So she would move all over the country. So I was born in Texas, lived in Euless till about first grade, moved to Seattle, lived there for like a year. And then we moved to New Haven, Connecticut, where I spent 4 years. I think I want to say about four and a half years. And then we moved back to Texas, Euless, my eighth grade year. But anyways, so yeah, like during the time I was in New Haven, that was probably like, I was ages 8 through 13 when I lived in New Haven. And for those who have never been to New Haven before, yes, Yale University is central. Yes, it is. But the outskirts is not very safe. It is not a safe location to be in. I mean, a lot of college towns are like that, but it was the hood for sure. And I developed a lot of habits that weren't beneficial to me. You know, I wanted to be cool. I wanted to be seen. I wanted to just be that very likable person, because like I said, like, I didn't really have a social life growing up. My mama kind of ruined that for me. But I was just kind of trying to navigate my way. And I just did things to look cool and to be cool. And, you know,
some of those things?
I was just bad. Like, I was just, you know,
if you were to pinpoint one of your worst moments, quote unquote, worst moments, what do you think? Like, damn, I should have never did that.
One of my worst moments, I would probably say I was like 12 years old and I ran away from home for like a night.
Why? What were you running away from?
I just think now, looking back on it, I was just expressing myself.
Really?
In a way that I just didn't know how. So I felt like running away was the best way to do it at the time.
What was going through your head though? Like, you're saying you expressed yourself. You weren't at 12. Were you in that bad stage yet? Like, were you?
Yeah. definitely in that bad stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. But, you know, I was in detention, and then I think the night I ran away, I had like skipped school or something and had people over. And I got caught and I ran away. I mean, it was just that simple. Yeah. I didn't last more than a night, obviously, because I have nowhere to go. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah, I just think it's that thought of wanting to break free early, and you look for different ways to lash out, or look for different ways to kind of express, you know, everything that you've gone through. You've gone through a real life. Like you talked about bouncing from homes, and then later on you go from couch hopping in high school, and the different things that you experience, it's almost like it's robbing you of your childhood.
Yeah, so, basically.
Yeah, you grow up with such a guard on you. How hard is it? Because right now you're being so candid, you're being so vulnerable, but in your days, how hard is it to not even like socially, to different interactions, for you to meet somebody and for you to let your guard down? Does it take a lot? It must take a whole lot for you. How is it?
Are you talking about in friendships or like intimate?
And let's go intimate.
I would say, and that's the interesting thing, I wouldn't say I keep my guard down. I think that's my problem with dating, at least.
Boundaries,
I think, yes, exactly. I think, but through all this, if my daddy, yes, I have daddy issues, if my daddy would have been there, I wouldn't have gone through half the shit I went through. You know what I'm saying? Because he was there, he was sane. You know what I'm saying? But he didn't fight hard enough to help us out. And within that, like, I didn't see him for another 16 years. I think the last time I saw him, I was 3. And I didn't meet him again until I was 19.
Right.
So he was absent majority of my life and majority of the time that I went through. So, yes, I would say I had an absent father in my life. And with that, and I think this applies to many people who don't have a father figure in their life, I resorted to seeking that love in men.
Right.
So instead of keeping my guard up, I would constantly let my guard down. And I've become like this hopeless romantic. We're thinking like every guy is the one, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I've had to let that go, obviously. But, right. You know, like, that was just something that also stemmed from childhood. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't know what it felt like to be loved by a man in any way, shape, or form. You know what I'm saying? Like, and my mama never had boyfriends or stepdads around. Like, my brothers and I fought a lot. So I never really had that, I guess, in a family setting. So I seeked it other places, and I obviously looked in the wrong places a lot of times, and even then, that's still a battle I'm dealing with today. Jesus, y'all know dating is so hard.
Yeah, I like that you candidly, just honestly, openly voiced that, because a lot of the times we don't know where that comes from. Like, you shared that you had issues with your father, an absent father not being there, and so it played out into your relationships. So my question to you, though, is, have you healed from that? Yes, he's an absent father, and yes, he wasn't there early in your life. But in my personal opinion, I think if we hold these things towards people in our lives, like, let's say, hatred or disdain, or that, it kind of holds you back, and you internalize those things, because you can't feel abundant and joy and still have hate. They literally don't go together. So it's like when you wake up, you're in fight or flight. It's like, today, do I check my phone? Oh, this happened. This triggers something from my past. Okay, that sets my day. Like, do you still hold that for not only him, but just somebody that let you down and broke your heart and you went into grief? Like, how do you deal with those things to help Sherilyn grow? Yes, these things. Sherilyn is such a strong figure that's done everything in her life, but has a past, has a quote unquote troubled past, if you will. How do you break away and say, hey, those things got me to this point, and for me to step into the next view of Sherilyn, how do you do that?
Honestly, as far as father figures and daddy issues, I haven't figured that out yet. That's something I'm still trying to figure out, and I know that for sure because I haven't forgiven my father for not being there. And I only know that because every time he tries to talk to me, I get annoyed or I get an attitude. I'm just like, oh, why are you talking to me? You know what I'm saying? And that's internal. That's something that stems from childhood. Like, where was you at? Don't be trying to do stuff now. You know what I'm saying? So that's just something I'm still having to learn to get over. And that's something that I'll just have to personally take care of with him. And I've done certain things. I've written him letters that I felt like my inner child would say to him. And he also, I feel like, is very traumatized and hasn't expressed or, you know, those suppressed emotions from being separated from his kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's definitely going through it too. You know what I'm saying? And I can't be upset with him about that. And that's something that I'm having to learn. At the end of the day, he has to learn on his own as well. And that's just something that's going to have to play out between both of us. I have to learn, he has to learn, because he still says things that I'm just like, you get on my nerves. With me, he tries to force a relationship that I'm not ready for. And that's the problem between us. You know, Sherilyn, and
you're I think, no, like, you're almost, in the way that you articulate yourself, one, it's beautiful, two, it's brave. Like, it's so brave. There's so many people listening that something is holding them back from doing this and from voicing this. And I know that you're empowering a lot of people to speak out on their real issues and what they've gone through. So, like, I'm like, wow, this is awesome. You're candid, by the way, like, your delivery. You laugh about certain things. I know that it's really inside of you. You've gone through this. So it's normal to you, but it's like, I'm also working through it. So your delivery is different, but I honestly love it, because it's Sherilyn, and it's just how you are. I think the one thing that you said that I really highlighted, and I wrote it down, I'm just like, wow, your ability to separate Sherilyn today, like I just said, like, I'm still dealing with it. I'm still working with my relationship with my father. Like, I'm still working on forgiving him. And the other Sherilyn, like, I do recognize how he feels not being there with his family. He must be going through it too. Like, for you to have sympathy for somebody or empathize, whatever, both of them, like, I think that is so huge. I don't know where that comes from, because I'm listening. I'm like, I don't know if I could do that. Like, that is such a beautiful story that you just told, because it's like, you can have this pain and disdain and anger and hurt and all these limited emotions towards somebody that limits you, but you can also have an abundance of love. And I can see why he feels this way, and I can see what they might have been going through. Oh, I think that is... honestly, the next step, I think, for you, because one thing that you just said, that in forgiving your father, like, we're still working on that, and you sent him all these notes. I think the next step, obviously, is to work past that, and not by solving and everything's all good, but using that moment to kind of drive you forward in everything else that you do. And so, like, you just show that you can flip it on its head and say, I went through this, but, like, I can help people through that. Almost like, I can see why he felt like that. Doing that in different things that you do, I think, I don't know, I'm just talking, but I'm like, wow, that is beautiful. Mm-hmm. I've never heard somebody speak about an absent father in that way. And I think, honestly, that just helped a lot of people and myself. So thank you. I don't know, I'm just talking, but I think that's something that's huge. I wanted to move on to that post that you did put up, that I did say, hey, I got to screenshot this in this moment. Like, this is huge, and read some of it. She says, over the past month of my isolation / self-healing journey, I, number one, discovered the root of my insecurities. Now, I want to stop there and just ask, because when you see somebody post something like this, a month before, she says she took a month off in the last month. A month before, she must have been going through a tough time, going through real moments. So could you take me to the month prior you put this post and you said, I got to shut it down. I got to lock into myself. What were you going through? And just take us through those real moments.
Yeah, it was that heartbreak. It was that heartbreak. I had found out that he had decked her out with this Airbnb, and after he had been telling me they were his friends, and, you know, and I really, 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 like, made me feel some type of way. Made me really feel some type of way, and I was just like, you know what, like, that's really what it was. I was like, and that's what, you know, this was my mom, that's what sparked it. I was like, I'm tired of dealing with these cycles. You know what I'm saying? I'm tired of going through the same thing over and over again, these stressful situations with my mom, with me, whatever, you know, with my personal relationship.
Yeah. What were the ways those insecurities, though, were like manifesting in your life that you had to say, okay, I'm drawing a line in the sand, like without not just the relationship, but the insecurities that you were referring to?
When I say that I discovered the roots within my insecurities, first and foremost, I am reading a book called The Body Keeps the Score. I'm like on the very last chapter. I've been reading it for a while. It's such a long book, but it's such a good book. And it goes into the psychology of childhood trauma and how it affects you. Not even just childhood trauma, but just trauma as a whole. Like, you know, it talks about PTSD. It talks about bipolar disorder. It talks about why people use drugs. And you know what I'm saying? So it's a really, really good book about trauma and how it affects you as a human being. And then it goes into how you can heal trauma in a various amount of ways.
Yeah.
So reading that book was very enlightening to me. It helped me learn a lot about my behaviors and the way that I think and the way that I react to certain things. That's definitely, I think reading has definitely been something that has been very important through discovering my insecurities or the roots of my insecurities. And I also think I kind of already knew where they stemmed from. And part of that was, you know, my mother was a very insecure woman.
Yeah.
Anybody could have told that from a mile away. And a lot of things that people don't realize is that your parents' energy resonates. That shit gets absorbed. You
Facts.
Know what I'm saying?
Facts. Yeah.
And when your parents are not happy, when they're not stable, when they're not in the state of mind they should be, you feel all of that.
Yeah.
Because children are so sensitive to energies and just like animals, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Later on that fades off. But I absorbed a lot of her insecurities. And then on top of that, when I was in foster care, a lot of my insecurities rooted from them because I was, you know, emotionally, verbally abused in foster care. You know, I was told that I was less than what I was. And, you know, made feel like I wasn't going to be anything. And that, like I said, as a child growing up and you don't know what's going on, you know, you just jumping from house to house and being told everything's okay. You really don't know if it's okay. Like, you know, it's just that, all of that, it's just too much for a child to handle.
Right. And I think there's something you said also, and one of the things I read, you said, there's a difference between being desired and being valued. Could you explain what that means for you? Because I think you just kind of played to it in a different man, your childhood, you see different things, you're said different things. They're kind of internalizing, and your foundation is these insignificant feelings. Like, I'm less than, I'm insignificant, I'm not valued, I'm not desired, I'm not. Could you walk us through or take us to your definition of the two, and what is kind of what you desire or want in your life, desired versus valued?
I think desiring somebody or something is having something that you don't quite have fully, or wanting something that you won't fully take care of. Like, I can desire a diamond bracelet, you know what I'm saying? I could want it really, really bad, but you know what I'm saying? If I lose that hoe, it's gone. You know what I'm saying? Like, ain't nothing I can do about it. But when you value something, when you truly value something, you do everything and anything you can to make sure you don't lose it. And that could be extravagant trips. That could be speaking love languages. That could be even just a simple, like, vacation, but something different. And it doesn't even have to be that different. You just have to, even if that's in your own way, just going out of your way to make sure that whatever you got that's valuable to you is not going to be lost.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think it's for you, right? You've gone through and you recognize your past, your childhood, everything that you faced, and you're kind of in this growth stage, I would say. From that time, you really found some things about yourself. Take us through the real tough days. Because a lot of times, everybody has the mindset of, I need to change, I need to change, I need to change. But in those real moments where you isolate yourself, where you take yourself off social media, you're off the grid, so to speak, and you're figuring things out about you, you don't always have the motivation to do so every single day, but your persistence and that kind of resilience to say, no, I need to change. Can you take us through that, really, those resilient moments that you had to figure those things out? What are the steps, the day-to-days that you took to find out, okay, this is tied to my childhood. This is tied to that. Can you take us through one of those days in that month of isolation for you?
Well, when I first went to isolation, I consistently video journaled throughout the month. I would probably say 27 out of 30 days. I video journaled and I expressed how I felt that day, whether it was good or bad. I talked to myself on video as if I was talking to a friend and venting. And it felt really, really good.
That's awesome.
It felt
so
really
how did
good.
You do it? I'm sorry. For our listeners and for me, I've never done that before. Like, how did you do it? Did you feel awkward? Tell me how you felt.
No, I just recorded myself like a selfie on a video and just talked. You know, and just got that shit out. You know what I'm saying? It's because, you know, sometimes you don't want to lay too much on your friends. You know what I'm saying? They're going through their own personal battles. And like, yes, it is good to talk to people. But sometimes it's good to just be with yourself and acknowledge yourself and just spend time with yourself. And yes, video journaling, I feel like, is a very vital part of learning about yourself. So I definitely did that. I definitely video journaled. I spent a lot of time in nature. It sounds like super hipster, but
yeah, I read something that you said you like to really feel the nature and feel the, like, get down and actually feel the earth.
But really though, like, just being present and not being on your phone and just not worrying about what the hell is going on in the world, just spending time with the trees and the bugs and the bees, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not an ideal setting for a lot of people, but when you really are in that setting, you feel so good. Because part of that, though, is because God is in everything. God is in the trees, God is in the birds, God's in the bees.
Yeah.
And when you're not focusing on what's going on in the outside world, you can really feel that presence. And yeah. I feel like nature is a really great way to feel true spirituality. I like to pray in nature.
Yeah.
I like to meditate in nature. I usually meditate at the house, but when it's not hot, I will meditate outside, you know, so I really appreciate spending time in nature. I'll go walk my dog or do some shit, you know what I'm saying? But
yeah, so you'd video journal, you'd walk in nature, you'd come back to your house, and I guess you'd do it all over again. But what was, like, the breakthrough moments in those real times? Like, when you've done that over and over and over again, you kind of see a theme, like, okay, I'm learning this today, I learned this today, and you get kind of energized by what you're learning. What was the overall kind of message that you told yourself in that time?
To be present. To be present. And there were days where I would write down, like, there was a day where I wrote down, why do I feel this way? What triggered that? And then, why did that trigger me? What does this stem from? You know, I went way back down to the roots. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes you do have to write that down so you can really see, like, where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And dissecting that, you know? And a lot of people don't do that. Like, they'll be like, okay, well, yes, there's a pattern here, but, like, how can I break that pattern? You can't break the pattern without figuring out how it started.
Yeah, exactly. I think, yeah, you just said something that's so key, and I literally struggle with this, staying present. I think a lot of people, anxiety and depression, they're anxious, and they're so focused on the future or the past. They're so focused on the unwanted past or anxious for the future. This will happen, and they're trying to piece together their future. They can never see the love and the joy and the real things around them. I think that's fire that you said about nature. I need to try that because staying present is something that I work with. But I know that even those little things, those practical steps that you just referred to, it's like auditing your thoughts, writing them down. Okay, why do I feel this way? Okay, I feel this way because my childhood. Why? And it's like the curiosity, the childlike curiosity of impacting. And once you know why, you can interrogate that thought. Like when you voice it through video journaling, you can say, okay, I heard myself say this today. The next day I can say, okay, why was I thinking that? That's not true about myself. You can start interrogating that thought once you put it out. I think that's fire because for this podcast and what I do and what I'm really passionate about is for people to really connect with the true power within. It's like when you separate the two voices, the mind bullying yourself, you can face it, you can fight it, you can fend it off, but it starts with the awareness. A lot of people think like self-awareness is, I know why I feel this way. I feel. I don't think that is. I think it's, okay, I know why I feel this way, but I know the steps to get out of that feeling, to charge and then to serve others as a human being. I think a lot of us are held back by limited emotions, but once we step into service mode instead of survival mode, a lack or just all those negative limited emotions, it becomes limitless and your love can show and shine forth. I think that's beautiful. I think that's something a lot of people need to do is to isolate, really connect and lock into themselves. It kind of charges you up and gets you to the place you are today. I do want to revert and go to October 17th, More Than Just PR. That was the time that you did your first photo shoot, your first shoot.
Yeah.
How was that for you, stepping out into your own venture and kind of creating what you wanted to see?
It felt really good. It felt empowering, especially where I came from. You know, I, like, by the statistics, I wasn't supposed to be where I am. And I'm truly grateful for that. I definitely wasn't supposed to have my own business. I definitely wasn't supposed to be directing photo shoots. But that's where I ended up. So I felt very grateful in the moment. I felt like it was a super exciting experience. The venue was great. The client picked out the venue. I got the models. And everything just turned out really well. I knew the photographer, and it just turned out to be a totally amazing shoot. And in that moment, I just kind of had to recognize that I need to stop limiting myself so much and stop thinking that I'm incapable of the things that I'm doing. I can do it. But for some reason, I feel like, you know, like maybe they just won't get the results they want, or maybe they'll, you know, not like it 100% or whatever it may be. But even then, like, that's a self-limiting doubt that I also had to clear my mind of, because I overthought, you know, about it. And
you still feel that way?
No, absolutely not. I mean, that was a great shoot. I love it.
No, about just new endeavors. Say you get a huge shoot today.
Yeah, I do think that is something I still struggle with. And that's just me, you know, having a new business, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. That kind of insecurity. But I do know that I am fully capable of doing what I need to do to make a brand be better. And I see the results in that, you know, through my clients' work. But like I said, being, you know, new in my career field and being new at, you know, kind of just being my own manager, yeah, I've had to kind of get over those self-limiting thoughts. And something, like I said, I'm still working on improving, but the results are definitely showing me otherwise, for sure.
Yeah, that's fire. Mm-hmm. I think when you take out and you go out on a limb and you start your own venture again, you learn a lot about yourself. Do you think that has also helped you not only business-wise, but personally? Like, you're like, okay, I see that I can do this. I can do a direct and own shoot. I'm capable. Then it starts helping you. Like, I don't need to be insecure in my life, because it's like I just built case studies in my business life. I can, you know, I can pair it together with my own life.
Mm-hmm. I think those are just pieces I'm just going to have to put together on my own, you know, like individually. Like, yes, I'm working on myself, but I also have to work on my business confidence. I have to work on my social confidence, how I feel in social settings. They're all small things I have to work on. And that's a lot of, that's why healing is so hard. What a lot of people don't realize. It's like you have to go through all the time.
I'm going to be honest. I think you're so courageous and you're so strong, but throughout this whole talk and interview, I think I've been burning to say, like, yeah, you mentioned your faith in God, but it's like, you don't have to be strong. You don't, like, you can lean that on him, because for me, it's like, wow, she's experienced so much in her life. She's still going. Mm-hmm. She's still charged. But then it's like, you can't break through a glass ceiling on your own, for me. Like,
right. Yeah. And I totally get where you're coming from. With being present, I've learned about surrendering, letting go, finding God within.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I've definitely have paid a lot of attention to. But I have also noticed, to get there's a lot of internal things that I have to take care of first. If I don't trust myself, I can't trust anyone at the end of the day. And that's something I've had to realize. Like, yes, I trust God. Yes, I believe he's there by my side. But God is also within. I have to trust the God within. And right now, I'm not quite there yet. Yeah. And that's just me being honest, you know, and that's going to come with time and with healing, like I'm continuing to do.
What do you think limits you, like, in your days when you walk and you see things? Like, you took away from social media, so I know that's a mm-hmm. pull, and that's something that might have triggered you. What do you think that kind of hurts you in your process of wanting to move forward every single day? Like, what in your days limits you from kind of breaking that glass ceiling and charging forward?
My subconscious beliefs, limiting beliefs that I'm still trying to release. Because like I said, healing takes so long. Right. I know I'm capable of doing the things I'm doing, but my subconscious hasn't released that belief yet. Yeah. And that's the one thing that is so tricky, is the subconscious, because once something is instilled in your subconscious, it's stuck in there. Like, it's like, all right, like, you can say one thing, but in the back of my mind, like, this is how I really feel. And
yeah,
that takes training. It's like you train a dog. You have to train a dog to sit. You have to train a dog to shake. You have to train a dog to not act a fool in public. You have to train your subconscious to not believe the things that you know aren't true.
Right. I think for you, you're so brave, but there's something that you did say, surrender. And you kind of mm-hmm. said surrender, but I don't I got to trust myself. I got to, like, the God within. I think, in my personal opinion, if you lean into that surrender and you focus on there, you're so focused on everything that you're doing. If you spend time with focusing on that surrender, like, you'll mm-hmm. feel it, like, you'll get it. Because I think when you're saying that, like, my mind, that subconscious mind, everything you're saying is 100% true. And that's why I'm like, everything you're saying is hard to do on your own, for me personally, in my real tough times, in my real tough moments.
I know God's there.
Yeah, I know. There. I know. I know. And it's like, it's not even like a preachy moment, but it's like, a lot of people say, God's there. Like, a lot of Christians say that. That is not where I'm going at all. I think, for, like you said, God is within everything. And in the word, it says, be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, renewing your mind. But It's the Holy Spirit. You said you're spiritual as well. The Holy Spirit gives you the power. So it's like, when you can connect with the Holy Spirit, it's like, it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make mm-hmm. sense why I feel joy and everything has happened in my past and I'm still in a different mm-hmm. situation. But it's like, my mind is renewed. My spirit is renewed. And it's like, in those real times, you feel love. Like, I can't express it more than anything. Like, even in my, not to revert it to me, but in those times, it's like nothing else matters but where I'm at, like, where I'm seated at his face, like, where I can seek him. So it's like, I get what you're saying, that everything you're saying is valid. But for me, when I stepped into this, I was like, why not? Everything, I've done it my way. I've tried. I've pushed. I've pushed. I've fought. I've suppressed my emotions. All these real things I've experienced in my life. Why not? Let me give it a shot. When I gave it a shot, I said, oh my. Like, so I don't know. I think you're, again, I see somebody not for who they are now or whatever, like they're external, but I see a light in you that's curious of like, I want to make a way out. I want to make a way out of this. And it's like, once you find your way, boom, you could be able to serve others and build in your unique. I don't know. I think you're a bright light, honestly. Like, seriously, there's a lot of things you said there. A lot of people don't do this. A lot of people don't talk about their emotions and all the things, their traumas they've been through. There's so many people, 80, 90, never talked about this one time. You're 25. You're expressing how you feel. Like, you're working through it. That is so courageous. But I think the next step, in my opinion, again, is like that presence. That staying in his presence, trying to seek his face like you did. You're auditing your thoughts. You're writing it down. You're reading these books. How about you try it on the flip side? I think when you do that, it's like, whoa. It's like the overflow, whoa. I can go on and on, but I think that's fire. I think I did want to go through something with you. I'm talking. We're talking. There's these steps, right, to emotional health. And there's 7 steps. And I want to read them out. And when I say them, I want to get your definition, what you think, what you kind of feel when you hear them. It's 7 traits of emotional fitness: self-awareness, empathy, mindfulness, curiosity, playfulness, resilience, and communication. So I'm going to read out the first one, self-awareness. I'm going to say the definition, and then I'm going to ask a question. And when I ask this question, I would like for Ms. Sherilyn to answer. You ready? Okay. Self-awareness, understanding emotional triggers and biases. The question is, I wrote it down for myself, but I want you to answer. How do my frustrations with other people give me important information on myself?
How you feel about somebody else is always a reflection of who you are within.
Okay. Okay. So if you're frustrated,
that can be good or bad. That could be good or bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree. Like, if you're frustrated with somebody about them hurting you, you can unpack that and be like, okay, that hurt, or the way they hurt me is the same way this person hurt me in my past. And that you can kind of, it's like a loop. You can tie the two
right
together.
If somebody hurts you, that is a trigger of something
right
from your past. Nobody can really hurt you if you heal all those traumas.
That's fire. I definitely agree with that. I definitely, definitely agree with that. Okay, number 2, empathy. Understanding other people's emotions, feeling what others feel. Sympathy, intellectually understanding what others feel, but you're not feeling it at all. That's sympathy. Question, how can you move closer to people by understanding their experience and putting yourself in their perspective?
There's 2 ways. One, you can trauma bond, which is not the good way to do it.
Oh God, no. I don't think so either. Literally trauma bond. I don't even have to dive into it to know, like, okay, no.
Trauma bond, no. But I would say the other one is, I just want to say empathy.
Yeah.
Like, empathy is like the key way. Like, and I'm an empath. Like, I'm very empathetic. Like, I feel fucking emotions from a mile away. And like, that's why it's really hard for me to work with other people, because I'll be feeling their emotions and be making me feel from that way.
Right. But that means you're a lover, though. Right? You got a big heart. Like, you're, you know, I think that's fire. It's better to be that than to block off your emotions, say, nobody hurts me. No. And then run home and, like, you know, I think that's fire.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, to be empathetic takes a lot of energy. And you can be empathetic with someone and they not feel the same way back. So I don't even think that's a valid answer for that question.
Okay, shall we?
To grow a bond, at least.
Okay. Curiosity. I don't think I actually have a question for number 3, curiosity, but I'm going to say the definition and then you just give me a thought. Pursuing growth over defensiveness, asking questions gets us way farther. It's human. This is my personal note. It's human to get defensive. Tough because we don't want to see our own blind spots or weaknesses. What do you think about curiosity?
I think knowledge is power. I think the more you know, the better. And I think curiosity allows for that. Asking questions will get you a lot of answers. It will get you a lot of, one question can get you a lot of answers. And that's the beautiful thing about curiosity, is because you can expand on so much with it. And I also think curiosity stems from childhood. I feel like if you didn't have the complete childhood you should have had, you tend to be a lot more curious as an adult, or you tend to express that curiosity through artwork or networking or becoming super work oriented. But I think curiosity is a very important part of life, because why not? Why not want to know?
4, mindfulness. Becoming comfortable with being uncomfortable. When we aren't present, we are uncomfortable. Leaning into the things that makes you uncomfortable gives us more choices of what we can do with that moment versus how can I escape this? What do you think about mindfulness? I think this is where everything you've said comes to fruition here and shines through. What do you think about mindfulness?
I love to say, I feel like mindfulness is one of the most important parts of healing. And a beautiful way to be mindful is through yoga and through meditation. Meditation is really good, calms you down. If you really know how to do it, that shit can take you to a different dimension. Oh, you know what I'm saying? But like, yoga specifically proven mindfulness practice to make you feel a lot better. Taking care of the mind, soul, and body, you know, like you would your home. Like, you don't keep your house dirty. You want to clean it up every couple of days, you know, if it gets a little messy. And you want to do that with your physical body as well, and your mind. Your mental health is so important. Your mental health is really everything. That basically controls the outcome of your life. Like, if your mental health is not right, you're not going to make good decisions. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you have good mental health, that paves the way for you to become enlightened, to become awakened, to become in tune with yourself. But if, you know, you're sad, you're depressed, you know, ultimately it's just going to lead you down a dark pathway. Mindfulness is just everything. And not, it don't even gotta be yoga meditation. It can be music. Like, you know how much time I spend just listening to music?
If you were to say, I gotta lock into this emotion right now, what you listening to feel all the feels?
Chilombo.
Columbo?
Chilombo.
Chilombo. Oh, is that?
Janae Aiko?
Yeah, Janae? I don't know. What song gets you there? That's the song?
Well, Chilombo overall, the whole album was just really resonated with what I was going through at the time when I went through my isolation phase. But she has a couple of songs that are very healing and very moving in a healing process. She has one called Waves. She has one called Born Tired. She has a very nonchalant one called Oblivion. That song is beautiful, but it's so dark. You know, so it's just.
Now, music is a key, I think. Literally.
It's a universal language.
Yeah. I think every morning when I drive to the gym early on, I play worship. I ain't going to lie, I play worship, and I feel. Because that's how I want to start my day.
I ain't going to lie.
I don't know. Because. That's the way I start my day, is I play worship in the morning. And I said, I ain't gonna lie, because I'm thinking what I'm about to say. I cry every time in the car, like a good solid 20 minutes. It just like, and it's not like boo hoo tears. It's like, damn, like this is, that's why I'm like saying about the presence. I'm like, I can't explain this. A big 6'9" handsome brolic man, like I am, I'm boo hooing every single morning on the same way. And it's like, it's something you can't explain. So I think music is gets you there. Also, I do cry to regular songs. It's like, damn, like he's saying some. So no, I think that's fire. Number five is play. Being a yes and person, leaning into that vulnerability. When we play, our guards come down. That's scary if you're someone who works hard to keep their guard up. What do you think about play? I think this does play to a lot of your creative ventures and the things you're doing creatively. It's allowing you to lock in on that end. But what do you think?
I think everybody should have time to play, especially as adults. I feel like we spend so much time working, paying bills, take care of our parents, take care of the kids, you know, whoever it may be, take care of something. You always got to take care of the shit. Always got to go out and do some shit. Play is just so important because we don't get a lot of that, especially in adulthood.
Number six, resilience. Bouncing forward from failure and setbacks. We don't want to go back to where we were before. We make a mistake because there's an opportunity to learn from that mistake, to become stronger. Life is an exercise. These are all my personal notes. Life is exercise, like to a muscle. It's tearing that muscle and repairing that muscle. What do you think about resilience?
I think resilience describes a lot of people. There's a lot of battles that people don't really talk about and they just bounce back from. Me included. I don't talk about, nobody knows I went through half the shit I just talked about. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But the beautiful thing about resilience is that you can get up and go. And everything's going to be okay. You trust that everything is going to be okay. It might not seem okay in the time and moment, but at the end of the day, you know, God's got you. You have to just move forward and you accept that there's nothing you can do in that current moment.
You literally just, again, you have these moments where you just like, damn, she's really piecing everything together. And it's like, that is exactly what I'm like, just staying present, resilience, knowing like, okay, I can't do it all. I think intellectually and knowledge wise, you're leaning to what I was saying spiritually, like I can't do it all. I rest, I'm resilient, knowing like I've done everything to this point, but knowing that I trust God, I'm be better tomorrow. So I think that is fire by what you said. Communicating is the next step and the last of the seven steps. And like you just said, you haven't shared a lot that you just shared today with anybody. So those were the seven steps to emotional fitness. What do you think about the seven steps?
I think those are all great steps and very valid steps.
Yeah. And I think one that I would add again, I implore everybody because all I can do is speak to my experience like you just did. God, spirit, Holy Spirit, emotional fitness, because it's like you can work. But if you're always the source of who you turn to in the morning, it's like I'm in survival mode. I got to provide. I got to do this. When I wake up, I'm like, God, I'm a work. I'm a work today, but I know like I can't do it all. I can't be all these people. I can't be on 10. I'm a person. I'm a human. So I rest in his presence and I look to him. And I think that would be the number eight step is to, you know, ask, see what God has to say about your situation. So, no, that's fire.
He will send you the signs. He will send you the signs. He so will.
Moving on, though, and this is a huge thing that I see all over your socials. And she continued. What does that mean for Miss Sherilyn? And she continued.
I really like that quote because I look back on everything I've been through and I'm still the same old me. I never stopped being who I am. I never stopped going. I never stopped anything. I just kept going.
If you were to continue, what do you think is the most exciting part of your life right now? Like, what are you looking forward to? It could be business-wise, emotional-wise, like yourself-wise, healing yourself. What are you most excited about?
Reaching a full state of peace and happiness and present moment.
Sorry, and not to cut you off. You're looking, you're not, everybody listening to this podcast, obviously you can't see, I see her. She's looking up as if like she sees like this bright future for herself. Like she sees like she can visualize. Can you take us through what you're actually visualizing? Like, is it a family? Is it a place? Is it, what are you thinking about?
Well, I know the one thing, the only one thing I ever wanted in my life was to have a family of my own. Because like I said, I grew up in a broken family. I grew up with generational trauma. I don't want to go through that. I don't want my kids to go through that. You know, so that was something that was so important to me since, you know, going through foster care. Like since that adolescence, I was like, I don't ever, ever, ever want my kids to go through the shit that I went through ever in my life. So, yeah, that was probably my main motivation. But also, I'm just excited for the future of my career. I feel like once I do reach the full state of peace that I want to reach, I will start attracting more abundance and start attracting, you know, the things that I really want for myself. And, you know, that also, that comes with, you know, like I said, taking care of yourself, being good in good health mentally and having the right kind of people around you, all that matters.
Fire. And I think you just hit on it, right? And you're speaking of the family and the vision that you want. But I think you're getting there. You're going to be there because you just said that you have a problem with boundaries. That means you really love. And I think the key to get there is to create that within yourself. Now it's through loving more, loving friends, even though sometimes it might not play off in your favor, but it's almost like, through these times that you're experiencing, you have to know that it will produce a brighter future. You will have that family, that love that you have through the love that you share now. Like, yes, people don't know or can't like see the light, but like you're building in yourself through everything that you're going through. That like, okay, I'm able to love more. If let's say somebody that gone through that same time that you, everything that you've been through, block these emotions and say, I want to love and have, it doesn't work that way. Like you said, you're building and it's like for you to love more now, like, and your focus is enlightenment and fulfillment and these type of things that will take you there. I think that's so fire. For my listeners and for everybody listening, I guess the one thing I would ask you is, what are the practical steps that you think or that you take each day to connect with yourself, love yourself better? Like, what do you do? What takeaways? If they're listening, if little Sherilyn is listening to this, what would you tell her to do to kind of work through how she feels?
Well, first and foremost, get to the deep roots of your insecurities.
How do they do that, though?
Revisiting the past. And when you do that, you're going to get a lot of unwarranted flashbacks that you don't want, but it's necessary. You honestly have to relive trauma to release it. So first and foremost, find the roots of your insecurities. What caused the trigger? What triggers you? How to establish boundaries? Why can't you establish boundaries? And then just do different mindfulness practices, like meditate, go on walks in nature, like work out, exercise, artwork, dancing. I know dancing is a really good way to release energy. I actually dance quite a bit myself by myself.
Yeah.
If you're on my Finsta, you know, but we're not going to get into all that, but there's so many things that you can do. Reading is good for you. Reading just a page a day.
Yeah. And I think that's everything that you're saying is definitely key. Again, like if you change your state, like the way you feel, like you go out and you move, you get into nature, you're working out, you can change your strategy. Then you come home, and you're like, okay, I feel better about myself. These limiting emotions and these limiting thoughts that I had before, I just proved that I could get out of that by just the way, changing the way I feel. Now I can change my strategy on how I'm going to get to that level. When you change your strategy, you can change that negative self-talk tape that you have in your head, that self-story that you have. Change your state, change your strategy, change your story. I think that's fire. The last thing, thank you so much again for being on this podcast. I always ask all my guests this because, again, this is a Mind Bully podcast, and that inner voice, that negative voice that stops you from being the Sherilyn that you want to be, that negative, if you were to say to yourself, what does overcoming your mind bully mean to you?
Once you get past the subconscious and once you get past the negative thoughts, nothing can limit you. There's nothing. You are your own worst enemy. There's nothing anybody can do or say to you that you can't do or say to yourself already.
Facts. And like, as she's saying this, she's fixing her shirt, but I see it different. I see it like she's popping her collar while she's doing it. I definitely agree. And once again, I think this time that we had here, honestly, I value your time and thank you for just talking and going through technical issues with me that literally delayed for like 30 minutes for you to sit out, spend your night on a Tuesday talking to me on the Mind Bully podcast. I really appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. And thank you so much for being on the pod. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Mind Bully podcast. If you like this content, you like this episode, do me a favor, leave a 5-star rating and a review. It means the world for this podcast. For more eyes, ears, hearts, loved ones, daughters, sisters, grandmothers to see what we're building here together, this community, I need you to do that for me. I greatly appreciate it. Until the next one, peace and love. Episode 40.
Hey, Genix, you going off?